This is Free Speech Radio News for Wednesday, March 17, 2004. From Pacifica Station WBAI in New York, I'm Amma Bouadi. Advocates call for the censure of President Bush. We look at the latest Bloomberg controversy.
The intention of the test from the beginning is to make certain amount of children fail.
And the elections in the Islamic Republic of Iran. But first, these news headlines.
I'm Randy Zimmerman with the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. At least seven people have been killed and up to 200 injured in the worst street clashes between Kosovo Serbs and ethnic Albanians in 4 years since the United Nations assumed administrative control of the region. Jackson Allers reports from Kosovo's capital, Pristina.
This is a dark day for Kosovo.
That was UNMIC-head Harry Holkeri speaking at the UN compound in Pristina today after violence erupted between Serbs and Albanians in the ethnically divided city of Mitrovica in northern Kosovo. At least seven deaths have been reported since the onset of the violence. Five were killed in Mitrovica after Albanians gathered to express their anger at the drowning of two Albanian boys on Tuesday. Inter-ethnic violence has increased and demonstrations have sprouted up throughout Kosovo. Valon Sula is a local Albanian business owner.
I think that behind all of this is also political and economical stagnation and the all-day biased reporting by Serbian and Albanian media.
In the 5 years since assuming control of Kosovo, the United Nations and NATO have been trying to foster ethnic tolerance between the predominantly Albanian and Serb population. But Kosovans have expressed their outrage at what they perceive as an inadequate response to stop the violence from the over 17,000 international troops that make up the Kosovo Protection Forces, or KFOR. In Pristina, Kosovo, I'm Jackson Allers for Free Speech Radio News.
International monitors for El Salvador's upcoming elections on Sunday are being stopped at the airport. Rebecca Miles has more.
At airports in El Salvador over the weekend, there was a mass detention of 83 election monitors who were held for 24 hours without food and water. The social justice group CISPAS, the Committee in Solidarity with the People of El Salvador, claims that the ruling party, ARENA, and the U.S. government are trying to intimidate Salvadorian voters by claiming the opposition party, FMLA, has links to terrorist groups and to ETA. CISPAS's coordinator in El Salvador, Robert Rivers, had this to add.
If the FMLA were to win, then the United States is going to begin deporting Salvadorans from the United States back to El Salvador. And since the number one source of income for Salvadorans is money sent back from the United States, yes, that is causing fear amongst people.
Organizers for sweatshop workers and union groups are resolute in voting for change. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Rebecca Miles reporting.
U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell arrived in Afghanistan today, but before he left India, he faced off with university students over outsourcing and open markets. Binu Alex reports from Ahmedabad.
A rough estimate indicates that in the next 10 years, over 4 million jobs will be outsourced in U.S., mostly to India. But the U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell, on a visit to India, termed this as the reality of the 21st century. Before leaving for Kabul, Powell made it amply clear that India should open its markets. He participated in discussions with a group of students who asked for outsourcing even the counting of next US elections to India. India, one of the world's largest democracies, is due for an electronic voting next month for 543 parliamentary seats by more than 668 million voters. From Ahmedabad in India, Benu Alex for Free Speech Radio News.
More than 23,000 residents with lead contamination in the nation's capital may be receiving water filters per orders from the mayor. Darby Hickey with the D.C. Radio Co-op reports.
D.C. Mayor Anthony Williams has ordered water filters sent to the 15% of city homes with lead water service lines after residents were slow to get filters that were being given away. But lead contamination is not limited to homes with lead service lines, says Melody Webb of Water for DC Kids.
The mayor continues to wear blinders. We are awash in evidence that the water in DC is so corrosive that it is causing lead to leach from not only homes that have lead service lines, but homes where there are copper pipes with lead solders, lead fixtures, lead plumbing, and 9% of the homes that had copper lines actually had elevated levels of lead in their water.
Children and pregnant women are the most vulnerable to lead contamination, which can cause developmental problems or even strokes, kidney failure, and cancer. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Darby Hickey.
Republicans on the Hill want to take away low-interest rate education loans from mostly middle-class college students. Reporting from the D.C. Bureau, Jenny Johnson.
The Consolidation Loan Program allows college graduates to combine their student loans into one monthly payment at a fixed interest rate for up to 30 years. Given today's historically low interest rates, this program is coming under fire because, as rates are expected to rise, the government will be paying more in subsidies in the coming years. Changing the interest rate structure from fixed to variable would shift the burden from the government onto the graduate, according to Dr. Newbit.
Changing the consolidation loan interest rate formula from a fixed rate to a variable rate would roughly double the interest cost paid by students.
Titus Hamlet, a student who has taken out loans, urged the panel to keep the fixed interest rate.
It's going to cost families money, and to me, that's just something that you wouldn't want to do to middle to lower income families.
For Free Speech Radio News, I am Jenny Johnson.
And I'm Randy Zimmerman for Free Speech Radio News.
According to reports, a car bomb destroyed a hotel in central Baghdad today. As of FSRN's airtime, at least 10 people were reportedly killed when the attack toppled the five-story Hotel Jebel Lebanon, which has served many foreigners. The attack comes just 2 days before the anniversary of the Iraqi invasion. In Washington, Chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff General Richard Myers claimed that Iraq is on the road to democracy and economic prosperity. Meanwhile, the advocacy groups MoveOn.org and Win Without War have delivered over 500,000 petition signatures to Congress calling for the censure of President Bush. Mitch Jezerich has more from Capitol Hill.
Chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff, General Richard Myers, briefed reporters at the Foreign Press Club in Washington, D.C. on the status of Iraq 1 year after the invasion. He said the U.S. still planned to hand over control to the Iraqi Governing Council by the end of June, but that doesn't mean the U.S. military will be leaving or even downsizing in Iraq anytime soon.
The facts are that with the transitional administrative law, with U.N. Security Council Resolution 1511, we believe we have the authority to continue to help with security in Iraq post the 30 June transition to Iraqi sovereignty.
On Tuesday, the Pew Global Attitudes Project released its global survey suggesting that half of Iraqis believe their lives are better now than before Saddam Hussein was deposed. Other findings suggest that the majority of the people in countries polled, which include European and Mideast nations, believe the United States is overreacting with its war on terrorism.
I personally believe that is nonsense and expect that the tragedy last Thursday in Spain may have changed some of the minds, especially in Europe.
Madeleine Albright is the former Secretary of State under the Clinton administration. Though she says she doesn't think the U.S. has overreacted, she does say that there are other troubling numbers within the poll.
It is disturbing that Americans are the only ones surveyed who believe the war in Iraq helped rather than hurt in fighting al-Qaeda. And I'm concerned that the psychology of partnership that has prevailed for decades between Europe and the United States is being replaced by a psychology of dismissal on one side and psychology of competition on the other.
We're still bogged down in Iraq, and the administration stubbornly holds to failed unilateral policies that drive potential, significant, important, long-standing allies away from us.
Presidential candidate Senator John Kerry spoke in Washington, D.C. on Wednesday, where he laid out a proposal to create a Bill of Rights for military personnel.
We will fully fund veterans' health and veterans' benefits, and our veterans will no longer be the neglected soldiers of America that they find themselves today. We also have to secure the rights, not only of those who served in the past, but of all the patriots across this country who serve today. If I am president, believe me, I will not make the choice that it is more important to give people who earn $200,000 a year yet another tax cut at the expense of our men and women who uniform, who deserve to get the benefits that they have earned.
Also on Wednesday afternoon, as the House of Representatives debated a resolution to commend the U.S. Armed Forces for, quote, liberating Iraq, two liberal groups, MoveOn.org and Win Without War, delivered 560,000 signatures on petitions urging Congress to censure President Bush for what they call misleading the country into war. Sue Niederer's son was killed in Iraq.
He had actually finished his training in the end of July. This was on a Monday in August. Tuesday he was told, guess what, you're out of here. His commanding officer turned around to his commanding officer and said, why are you sending somebody wet behind the ears, has no training whatsoever, over to Iraq? You shouldn't be doing this. You know what the answer was? Too damn bad. We're sending him out. We need a body over there. And they got a body, literally.
It is doubtful a GOP Congress would censure the president. And if it did, censure is like a verbal reprimand having no effect on Bush's role as president. This Saturday, demonstrations against the occupation of Iraq will take place across the country. Pacifica Radio will have live coverage of those demonstrations. I'm Mitch Jezerich for Free Speech Radio News.
This week marks the 16th anniversary of one of the worst chemical attacks in world history. On March 16, 1998, the Iraqi military dropped deadly sarin gas on the Kurdish city of Halabja, instantly killing 5,000 civilians and making the rest of the area's population refugees. In Halabja yesterday for anniversary commemorations, U.S. Administrator Paul Bremer said the bombing served as proof that last year's U.S.-led invasion of Iraq was justified and asked peace activists to see how a peaceful village was, quote, turned into hell overnight by evil. What Bremer failed to mention in his speech is that, at the time, America was supporting Saddam Hussein. From the refugee camps of northern Iraq, Aaron Glantz has the story.
Children play soccer in the dirt of Banslawa refugee camp outside the northern Iraqi city of Erbil. In the late 1980s, hundreds of thousands of Kurds were led out of their villages at gunpoint, their villages bulldozed behind them. 60-year-old Aftau Khafud survived the worst attack. On March 16, 1988, Saddam Hussein doused the city of Halabja with deadly sarin gas, killing more than 5,000 civilians.
The wind was blowing the other way, so we survived. We tried to escape. We walked on foot for 7 days and seven nights towards Iran. It was the mountains, and there were no roads, only some Peshmerga to help us.
Today, more than 150,000 Kurds live in refugee camps in northern Iraq. Rafat Abdel Mohamed Amin is mayor of Banslawa camp.
I remember the day very well. They came one morning, Saddam's soldiers. They brought the bulldozers to destroy our house the moment we left it. Then they gave us a tent to live in. We were completely surrounded by checkpoints of the Iraqi army.
But Rafat knows Saddam's campaign of ethnic cleansing did not occur in a vacuum. At the time, the Iraqi army was locked in a long war with Iran. Europe and America backed Saddam, and Kurdish guerrillas, tired of Saddam's oppressive rule, sided with Iran.
America and Saddam, this time in the same way, because America wants to destroy the revolution in Iran.
In an interview in his Baghdad home, retired Iraqi Brigadier General Zeki Daoud Jaber tells Free Speech Radio News he oversaw the purchase of advanced surveillance equipment from France, West Germany, Sweden, and Japan, and aircraft from Italy, Britain, and Canada. He says more controversial purchases were routed through Chile and South Africa. At the time, Chile was ruled by Augusto Pinochet, a general who came to power in an American-backed coup d'etat. Apartheid South Africa was also supported by America. In addition, General Zeki says he personally saw chemical weapons arrive on airplanes from American-run NATO airbases in Germany.
I am in the airbase, and I see I know all the pilots from this squadron, from Tu Topilov 76. This is a big aircraft for transportation. They would change the frame and the color, and put Iraqi Airways, and we'll go to the Germany and will bring this. And the pilot, I will see him every day. And they tell me we will bring so many barrel from chemical weapon.
Among Kurds today, American complicity in the bombing of Halabja is an accepted fact. For people like Benslawa Mayor Rafet Abdelmohamed Amin, the gassing of 5,000 is a reminder America's current support of the Kurds could be short-lived.
The USA supported Saddam because they thought this relation with Saddam would benefit them. Every country does this. Then they changed their mind. They wanted to remove Saddam, so they started a war against him.
Many Kurds wonder why all the international attention given to the massacre at Halabja hasn't translated into better living conditions for the over 150,000 refugees who still live in camps. 17 years after the incident, packed mud in a canvas tarp still serves as the roof of Aftau Khafud's home in Benslawa refugee camp. The United Nations has provided her family with toilet facilities and 200 cinder blocks, which she has stacked into makeshift walls. The American government has provided her with nothing.
We would like to improve our situation. When it rains, we are afraid our house will collapse down on our heads. We want to return to our homes and live like others in normal houses.
For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Aaron Glantz in Erbil, Iraq.
A high-ranking delegation from the Iraqi Governing Council arrived in Tehran on Monday for five-day talks on bilateral cooperation. Among the most important issues discussed will be the exchange of pilgrims for holy sites. Meanwhile, the assembly elections of the Islamic Republic of Iran ended up with a victory for the Conservative Party. But this victory does not indicate that the majority that will be represented in the new Seventh Assembly corresponds to the majority of the people's will. The elections are now subject to both national and international criticisms on the basis that it was undemocratic. Ezgi Saritas files this report.
Last month, more than 500 liberal-leaning candidates withdrew in protest to the disqualifications of thousands of reforms contenders by Iran's hardline clerics. As a result, low participation at the polls and reformists lost most of their votes from the upper and middle-class Iranians who supported them before. Nesrin studies music in London and spends her holidays in Tehran. She explains why she did not vote.
If we voted to anyone, we were saying that we agree with the regime, but we don't. If we did vote, and now that we didn't, it will be the same.
The election debate began when clerics of the Guardian Council barred more than 2,400 candidates who were in support of expanding Western-style democracy and loosening strict interpretations of Islamic codes in social activities and the media. After protest, the council led by Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei and the Constitutional Founding Council reinstated about 1,000 candidates. The CFC is responsible of making sure Parliament adheres to Islamic rules. According to political science research assistant Hassan Gulam, they have the power to veto any decision of the Parliament.
The CFC rejected the nominees it accepted in the last elections on the basis they're not devoted to Islamic rule and the Republic. The rest of Khatami's party refused to join the elections under such conditions.
Reformist President Khatami was elected due to his social promises of improving conditions for women, youth, and upholding the rule of law. But many Iranians have yet to see changes in human rights violations and freedom of speech, which is a factor affecting the loss of confidence in the reformists. Tariq Hamid has run out of Iran because of being a member of illegal Iranian Communist Workers' Party.
We have witnessed many murders, tortures, and executions during the Khatami period. He has come only to make this regime live longer.
In 2000 parliament elections, there were more than 67% of the voters allowing reformists to gain control of the 290-seat chamber for the first time since the 1979 Islamic Revolution. Since then, they have tried to establish a revised economic and foreign relations strategy that seemed to threaten the conservative agenda and its existence. Journalist Ali Reza Hakkani.
I think that the conservatives intend to open the boundaries to the outer world. They did not want the reformists to take this step. They are aware of the fact that the regime cannot survive with all these contradictions. But if reformists had done it, their existence could have been threatened.
The new assembly will start working in May with an overwhelming majority from the Conservative Party. Although many cannot predict clearly what will happen, most Iranians and the international community are worried about what will happen next. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Ezgi Sertaş with Özhan Önder from Tehran, Iran.
The Los Alamos National Laboratory in northern New Mexico is the birthplace of the atomic age. The Manhattan Project at Los Alamos developed the nuclear bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The lab today, under the University of California's management, is pursuing new nuclear weapons like the Bunker Buster bomb. While the U.S. nuclear program has a clear mandate for the Bush administration to create a new generation of nuclear arms, what's unclear is whether the University of California will continue to manage Los Alamos as it has for more than 60 years. The University of Texas has its eyes on the nation's premier nuclear weapons facility. Stefan Ray has more.
Last year, the Department of Energy, the federal agency with authority over the nation's nuclear weapons facilities, announced that it would open up competition for the management of the Los Alamos National Laboratory. The University of California's management contract expires in September 2005. The decision to open competition follows a series of incidents, including security breaches, which brought scrutiny to UC's management. The Department of Energy will be accepting bids later this year. Last month, the University of Texas's Board of Regents formally announced it will prepare for a potential bid. So far, the universities of Texas and California, along with Lockheed Martin, have entered the race. Monty Jones, a spokesman for the University of Texas System, explained the university's interest.
Expanded opportunities for research to be conducted, either faculty and graduate students and even undergraduates, either at the lab or on their campuses. There would be, of course, the prestige, national prestige of operating such a laboratory.
But not everyone thinks that the management of Los Alamos would bring the University of Texas much in the way of research and educational opportunities. This past week, a University of Texas student group called UT Watch hosted a forum that included Greg Mello, the director of the Los Alamos Study Group. Mello is from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
I just wanted to say I don't really think there's much in it for UT as far as research or educational opportunities.
Mello emphasized that science at Los Alamos is for the U.S. nuclear program.
Los Alamos does some cutting-edge science, but a lot of the science is very specialized and very oriented toward defense problems and nuclear weapons problems in particular.
Under the Bush administration, the United States has rapidly accelerated the development of new nuclear weapons technologies. Much of this work is taking place at Los Alamos National Laboratory.
A new weapon would be a high-yield, earth-penetrating weapon, which Congress has asked for now. Initially, the administration asked for it, now Congress has endorsed this. Another example would be the laboratory has been asked to join the effort to get ready to conduct a nuclear test in a shorter amount of time. They have been given a task of being ready in 18 months for a nuclear test in Nevada. Another example would be a weapon that could incinerate chemical or biological weapons if found somewhere.
Factors that may help the University of Texas's bid include the fact that the president is from Texas, that Texas Senator Kay Bailey Hutchinson, a UT grad, is a strong advocate and that Dale Klein, assistant to the Secretary of Defense for Nuclear and Chemical and Biological Defense Programs, is a former vice chancellor of the University of Texas System. Concern in Texas is small but growing. This past week, about 40 people attended the UT Watch Forum in Austin, and in Fort Worth, Texas, State Representative Lon Burnham, a Democrat, formally announced his opposition to the University of Texas's plans, saying he will fight the possible lab bid on every front necessary. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Stefan Ray in Austin, Texas.
On Monday night, New York's Panel for Educational Policy voted to adopt a controversial plan ending social promotion in New York City schools, hours after Mayor Michael Bloomberg orchestrated the last-minute replacement of three members who planned to vote against the proposal. Meanwhile, those who opposed the way the mayor stacked the panel in his favor plan to question the legality of Bloomberg's replacements for the three panel members he fired. Gail Walker has the story.
The controversial plan to eliminate social promotion in New York City schools passed by a vote of 8-5. The proposal, which was backed by both the mayor and the school's chancellor, Joel Klein, calls for all third graders who fail to pass standardized tests in math or reading to be held back. Proponents of the plan say it's unfair to promote children prematurely, but others like Sam Anderson, education advocate and professor at Medgar Evers College in Brooklyn, New York, disagree.
50% of the children who are left behind in one grade as presently constituted never really graduate from high school. And it increases dramatically if you're left behind twice. So the idea of leaving children behind is saying that half these children, if they don't get over on this exam, are doomed to be high school dropouts. And that's something that we don't want to see happen.
The council's Black, Latino, and Asian caucuses held a news conference Tuesday denouncing the plan. Councilwoman Margarita Lopez believes the number of children left behind becomes even more significant because the company contracted to provide remedial training for the students this summer is a subsidiary of Edson Schools, the country's largest commercial school management company.
The information that we gather in the last couple of days, that is a company connected to the Edison company who's going to be in charge of the remedial classes on the summertime. And it's important to know here that when we talk about this test, we're talking about $155 million attached to it. And the $155 million is nothing else than a contract for remedial tutoring during the summertime.
Several council members vowed to block funds the mayor seeks for implementing the new policy. Lopez is concerned that so little is known about the test. She says she suspects that the test is a norm-referenced test, which compares students against each other.
The intention of the test from the beginning, when it's a norm-referenced test, is to make a certain amount of children fail. The question here is not about measuring the knowledge of the children, how much they have learned, but the intention of the test is to make sure that you return certain percentage of children, no matter what, in order to reduce the population of children who will take the test of the fourth grade, which is when the numbers are measured to see if the school progress or not.
And says Lopez, Bloomberg's plan is designed to eliminate students who might perform poorly on the all-important fourth grade test, which will be taken next year, just as the mayor, who has placed heavy emphasis on education reform, will be running for re-election. New York City Public School third graders will take the standardized English and math tests in late April. Reporting for Free Speech Radio News, I'm Gail Walker.
You are listening to Free Speech Radio News. Free Speech Radio News was produced at Pacifica stations KPFA, KPFK, WBAI, and community radio station WMNF. For more information or to visit our news archive, visit the website www.fsrn.org. I'm Amma Insia Bouadi.